part off.
I know.
Hi, we're the librarians. Librarians.
Hi, everyone. We're back for an update after our previous episode where we were talking about fake news. Jennifer sent me a great article posted on Inside Higher Ed by Barbara Pfister. So we're going to be talking about that article today, and probably a bit shorter of an episode than some of the other ones, but it's a follow-up. If you want to track down the article, the information is that it's written by Barbara Pfister on Inside Higher Ed. The title of the article is Post-Post-Truth, and it was published on April 13th, 2017.
So we'll link to it in the show notes as well. But if you can't wait and you want to see it now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So what Pfister is talking about in this article is sort of, I mean, she's taking on fake news, but she's saying, she points out how Facebook and Google have sought to come up with some technical solutions for fake news. And I've noticed on my own Facebook app on my phone recently, sometimes when I just open it, there's I haven't actually clicked through it, and but there's some kind of tutorial or little information that you can click through to find out, you know, how to identify fake news.
Yeah, and I think they're both doing more work to flag fake news and market as such. And, you know, I don't want to say that's not a positive thing, because I'm glad that they are recognizing that they have a role, because previously they wouldn't even acknowledge that they had a role. So I think that's a good thing. But I am a little suspicious that it's going to actually really make an impact, like a major impact. And I think that's why I like this article, because I think in our last talk about this, I was sort of struggling to articulate my problem with this idea of fake news. And I think this article does a much better job than I did of explaining.
Yeah, she does do a really good job. And that's what she takes on specifically. She says, there's not a technical fix. There's not an algorithm fix to the fake news issue. And she does acknowledge that there are some things that can help. But I think, I mean, even from where I sit, when I think about a technical fix or the idea of fact checking or posting, you know, Snopes responses to articles, which she addresses in the article, there's something where I kind of know, but I wasn't able to articulate in the past, that it's off, that there's something off about that solution, because that solution is satisfying to me. And I know if it's satisfying to me, then it's inherently not satisfying to other people. You know, it's almost like this smugness, like, ha, I could just post this Snopes response or this fact check response, and you'll see that you're wrong. And I don't know, it was sort of an indication to me that something was a little bit off.
Yeah, well, I think one problem with the technology solution, or sort of people reporting, for instance, fake news, I think can be really problematic. And this harkens back to a conversation you and I had a long time ago about how if you already inherently mistrust authority, you know, this notion of authority, and you know, this notion that, like, that this authority is not correct, or is trying to either deliberately mislead you, or it doesn't care about misleading you, then you're not going to accept a designation that says, from that authority, that says this is fake news. You know, so I think already it's not set up. It's not really getting at the heart of the problem, which is this idea of what is authority, and this idea of, you know, creating kind of alternate versions of the truth, or, you know, and believing that is the real truth. It's again, we come back to this complicated problem.
Yeah. Well, right. And the thing too is, I think you and I both have done a really good job of getting students to think about authority and finding ways for them to discover authority in instruction sessions. And I really like doing that. But in thinking about some of Barbara Pfister's ideas here, we're allowing students to make meaning. So for example, one thing I know we've both done is have students look up authors of articles from, you know, journals, trade journals, magazines, newspapers, websites, and find out what they can about who that author is. And I think my assumption has sort of been, once they know their credentials, their expertise, you know, whatever it is, a light bulb will sort of go off, telling them that this is a credible source or not. But one thing that she brings up in the article, an example she uses is far-right Christian organizations that have worked to create alternate histories and facts that explicitly challenge science in the academy. And one thing that came to my mind was the Creation Museum. And she talks about it as this entire worldview. And as I was reading, I was thinking that if somebody with a worldview that is entrenched in some of these alternate histories and facts comes up against an article that challenges them, from their perspective, it is fake news or information.
Right.
Because everything they know to be true is in opposition of what they are reading.
Yeah.
So that's where a fact check won't work, because it's just in cahoots, essentially, right, with the original article.
Right, exactly. Like I said, they mistrust the authority,
yeah,
so they're not going to accept that as a valid conclusion. And I think that's, you know, I like that she brings up this point. She later in the article says that there's three actors that need mm-hmm. to play a part in this, and that would be journalists, librarians, and teachers. And actually, I think the teacher piece is really important, because I think that in America, we just, I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons probably, but, you know, we teach to the standardized tests, and our education system has got all kinds of problems and stuff. So I think we're missing an opportunity to help people. And it's, that's again a challenge that some people would say, well, you're indoctrinating youth. But I think it's more of giving them some tools for critical thinking and, you know, it's not about telling them exactly what to think. It's mm-hmm. about helping students from a young age to evaluate information, to think critically about sources, to, you know, all of that. And there's no one answer that they have to arrive at, I don't think. But I think alternate facts, or like, you know, post-truth, that's a problem. And I think that's a societal problem, and it can't just be solved just by one piece of, you know, like just by librarians or whatever. It has to start early and continue right. throughout life.
Yeah. And I also wanted to revisit another quote she has in there about, so I'll just read the quote briefly. She says, whether these traditional institutions, which have to various degrees been declared untrustworthy by those who gravitate to alternative institutions of knowledge, can help us negotiate the wide gap between community narratives that are so very different remains to be seen. And I like that she brings up the idea of community narratives and how, and she says previous to this that, the Facebook algorithm isn't filtering our news. It's our own sort of cognitive habits. It's our own community narratives. It's our own history with information, which is shaped not just by our families and institutions like churches, but by schools and by the public education system, if students go through that system. And it also made me think about a bunch of books I hear people talking about a lot right now, like Hillbilly Elegy, which I started but didn't finish, and Strangers in Their Own Land, which I also started but have not finished. but it's still on my shelf at home. It hasn't gone back to the library yet. And even the podcast S-Town, all of them are, for liberals anyway, this idea, this sort of attempt to get inside that narrative of people who are very different from themselves. And I'm curious, I guess, what Barbara Pfister would say about that, if that's a noble attempt, or if that's, I don't know, like, if there's something strange about that, if it's, I don't know, I'm just curious, but it seemed worth mentioning, because she's talking about community narratives and them being very different.
Yeah. Well, and actually, and I wish I had noted what it was, but I actually saw an article briefly the other day that was mentioning that there's more liberal fake news, like liberal-leaning fake news suddenly appearing. And so I don't think, I think some of the examples Barbara Pfister gave in her article were, you know, of conservative kind of organizations, but I think it's not a problem that's only on one side. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of reasons I think these kind of counter narratives spring up. And I think, but it makes it challenging when you're trying to teach students how to, you know, find their, like, and I was just, I was right here. I was just going to say find their truth, but what does that even mean?
Right.
Like, is that, you know, how do you honor their own experiences and perspectives, but still, is there some still objective truth in there as well? I don't know either.
These are good questions. And I also did want to say, as I was mentioning those couple of sources, I'm curious if in conservative circles there are certain books that are going around that are sort of like, if you want to understand how liberals think, you should read this book. And I haven't looked into that. And I kind of, actually, I saw on NPR sometime after the election, it was this article called Read the Book That's Not Meant for You. And I think it was one of the two I just mentioned, Hillbilly Elegy or Strangers in Their Own Land. And the other one, it might have been Ta-Nehisi Coates' new book.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, it was along those lines. So I guess, and the article was saying, you know, liberals should read the one about conservatives, or the urban should read the one about the rural, and then and vice versa. But yeah, it's an interesting idea.
Well, and I mean, that's why I think it's good that this article talks about teachers and journalists being involved, because librarians, we can't, you know, we can't, certainly can't tackle that problem. We can't, we're, you know, even at best case scenario, we teach a 4-credit course or something. We still don't have time to delve into the complicated social networks in America and, you know, to provide another perspective and, you know, and that's individual anyways. So what's individual to one student is, you know, another student has a very different experience, and how do you, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's not easily tackled. Not that it's never addressed, but it's not easily addressed in library settings.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we can be the mouthpiece a little bit. I mean, whenever I meet, not every time, so that was misleading. So often when I meet, when it's relevant with faculty outside the library, I tell them to talk to students about how meaning or information is made in their field. So like, how as a biologist do you create information? How as a literary scholar do you create information? And I try to get students to engage in conversations about the information worlds in which they live, so they can just start thinking of it as I don't even know the right word, but like, not as a right and wrong, not as a, you have to learn these facts, you have to memorize these details, you have to follow these steps, but that, like in many other fields, there is nuance and it's interesting and you already do it and some of those things.
Well, and I think pointing out that there is this complex network as well is important, that it's, things are connected and information doesn't exist in little discrete bundles separated from everything else. It's all, you know, things are tied together. And I mean, that's, you know, obviously what the framework tries to get at, mm-hmm. that this is, it's a complicated, nuanced information landscape, not just, and then your tiny topic is like one little piece of that. So I don't know. It's, again, complicated, and we're going to have to, all of us librarians are going to have to keep thinking about how to talk about this and how to talk about it in a way that's approachable, that's respectful.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's open-minded on our, I mean, we all have our own biases, and I think it's really important for us to keep examining our own biases as well. And that's hard, and, you know, it takes a lot of work, but.
Yeah, but it's worth it. And it's challenging work that I'm interested in right now anyway.
Yeah. So we'd love to hear from you guys. Tell us what you think. Join our conversation. Tell us if you think we're ridiculous and full of it, or if you have anything else to add to our conversation about fake news, tell us what you're doing. You can come to our blog at the what is it called? thelibrarysessions.wordpress.com. So we'll have this episode posted there. And we'd love to hear comments on the blog. So,
yeah, and I'll just say special thanks to Barbara Pfister for writing this article and Inside Higher Ed for getting it up there so we had something to talk about today.
All right, bye, everybody. The Library Sessions is produced by Martinique Hallerduff and Jennifer Laubond, and it's released under a Creative Commons license with some rights reserved. The music in this episode is from The Library Ants. You can check them out at the Free Music Archive or see the link on our website at thelibrarysessions.wordpress.com.